Awesome. All right, welcome to Corridor Conversations, the podcast segment of NCTE's Classroom Corridors, sharing expertise and inspiration from elementary teachers. I'm your host, Gary Gray Jr. Today we are talking with two amazing authors and educators. We have Katie Ray and Stella Valva about wonders, words. And I had the honor of reading this book today. And before I share anything, I just want to say I absolutely love everything you did to this text. Everything. And one of the reasons why, and I know I'm talking too much already, it is so different than anything that I've ever seen. When it comes to structure, in regards to how you laid out the text, I love every second of it. I love the student examples. Oh my gosh, I just fell in love with the student examples. I think there was like Kyle, Devin, Justin, Will. Honestly, I was like, so as soon as I saw the examples, I was like, this is what educators need in their classroom. And I love the other segments on, you added a certain section that talked about just like in the classroom and like things you could do. And I thought like you just laid it out so easy for educators. I'm so excited to have you.
Thank you.
All right, let's have a conversation on like how this happened and what was that process like for you guys?
Well, I guess I'll start quickly. You know, NCTE had asked me off and on through the years a lot to update this book because the writing, you know, the book is grounded in examples from literature. And of course, so most of the original ones are out of print. You can't even get them now. And it just never was the right time for me to do it. I had a lot of other things going on. And so Frankie Siberson called me last summer and, you know, I've been retired now for a few years, actually. I retired in the middle of the pandemic, like a lot of people. And it just, you know, it occurred to me that it might be interesting to revisit it and do it. And I love Frankie, of course. And I had all these reasons, though, not to do it. And she had already thought all of them through, including one of them was I'm not in classrooms anymore. And, you know, the book, the beauty of the book, I think, from the original to now was that it was grounded in classroom practice. And I said, I don't know how to get around that. I'm not interested in going back in. And, you know, and so, but she had an answer for that. She had Stella in mind. And so she reached out to Stella. And of course, Stella's in classrooms every single day supporting teachers with this and lots of other work. And so, you know, and I was like, I don't know children's literature anymore. I'm not up to date on it. And Frankie said, well, I know it. I can help you. But in the end, what was beautiful was I did that myself. I dug back into children's literature and really got to know the field, including your beautiful book, Gary, which is in there. So, yeah, the pieces just came together. And then it was just this fabulous opportunity to revisit a book after, you know, years of continuing to live with the work. You know, I wrote lots of other books that kind of spun out of the original Wondrous Words. And so to go back to that grounding and have the opportunity to revise and rethink and reorganize in some cases, update everything, it was an amazing process. And it was lovely to work, you know, alongside Stella and Frankie to be able to talk things through with both of them. I visited up in Columbus, Ohio and got to watch Frankie and some of the fabulous teachers she works with in action. So it was a great process from my perspective.
Stella, how about you?
Oh my goodness. So I love telling this story because the first time I read Wondrous Words was 2004. One of my literacy coach is the one that recommended. I was new teacher in the profession, trying to figure it out, you know, writing workshop and understanding also how to elevate writing all across, you know, languages and ages. I work, you know, my expertise areas is multilingual learners. So the minute I read Wondrous Words, my life as a teacher of writing changed but also my writing life changed. Because once you, and like Katie proposes in Wondrous Words, once you develop this habit of mind of reading like a writer, you completely change the way you see the world for your students, for yourself, as a student, as a learner, as an educator, as a coach. I have the chance to meet Katie for the first time at NCTE in Chicago, and I believe it's 2012. And I have, I tell people I'm a scholar of Katie Woosworth's work. I've been studying it for a long time because I've always enjoyed writing. Writing is the way I have processed life. Writing is the way that as an immigrant, I make sense of the world. Katie's work added so much richness to my life. And to do this with students across languages, I serve students from 93 different languages and know that there is no boundaries for this work. It's an honor. It's an honor. And it's been such a joy that, you know, all these years later, I get to do this work all over again in a classroom. I spent time in Katie Spapish and Jessica Ardelia's classroom, and toward the end in Lauren Scott's classroom as well. And to be able as a teacher leader to also lift other teachers so that they can be introduced to Katie's work. And now, you know, it's a whole generation that gets to enjoy this work again.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And We can love on Katie. We're going to do that. We can do that.
It's the way.
We could do that. And Katie, the question I have for you is one of the parts I loved right away. I mean, you did it throughout. And as a writer, I just love storytelling. And there's so much storytelling in the book through like experience. And like, I don't remember many, and I haven't read a ton of educational books recently, but like the ones that grab me are the ones that have personal stories that connect right away. And you guys do that throughout the entire thing. Katie, one of the questions I was thinking about, there's the beautiful opening part where you are grappling with the idea of like, you talked about this earlier, like, do I want to do this? And how do I do this when I wrote this book so long ago? Tell me a little bit more about like that mindset and like what got you there, like entirely, like, because that's a tall task, because that book in itself has a legacy, its influence, and now you're trying to like create something, you know, that is, you know, kind of like it's big brother or big sister, right? Could possibly come with some pressure. So how did you get to that point ultimately?
Well, I mean, I'll say two things about that. One is that the idea is just still so relevant. It's so, you know, I was walking two or three days ago, and I was listening to the Ezra Klein show, and he was interviewing Chris Hayes, and they were talking about Zoran Mamdani's rise to winning the mayoral primary in New York City and how he used social media so effectively, and something called vertical video, which I had to figure out what that meant, but his use of vertical video, and, you know, why is it that other politicians aren't able to do this as the way he was, and just to come out of nowhere. And Chris Hayes said, you have to be consuming. I think you have to be consuming to be producing. And meaning, you know, that's the generation that Mamdani has come up in, right? He's a consumer of that kind of media. And so he is, and other people, and if you're not a consumer, you can't be a very good producer of it, right? The language of it, the grammar of it, they were talking about all that sort of thing. And I was like, you know, that's it. That's real. That's what Wondrous Words is about. You have to be a consumer. You have to be a reader to be a writer. You have to be a consumer to be a producer, no matter what kind of media it is. And so once you understand that, the question of what can that look like as classroom practice, right? Mm-hmm. And back in the day when I wrote that book, it was mainly just about reading to write, but today it's about any kind of compositional media, right? That mm-hmm. you have to first be a consumer before you can be a producer. And you have to see yourself as a producer too. I want to do this too. And mm-hmm. so I think it's just partly that the idea is still just so true. And it's as old as when Muddy taught Buddy. How did you like that line?
Yes.
Every now and then a line like that just comes out, right? But, you know, again, my husband and I were at that Buddy Guy concert last summer. And he was telling this story about listening to that Buddy Waters LP over and over again to learn how to play. And I was like, that's mm-hmm. it, right? So it's as old as that and as new as Zoran Mamdani. And it's still so true. So there was that, but there was also, you have to understand, I spent the last seven years of my career as an editor. Mm. I walked away from writing and consulting and teaching, and I became an editor, and I worked with other people on their books, and I learned so much about writing. I became, you know, myself, and to have then the opportunity to go back and revisit a book that I wrote with that new sensibility about writing that garnered from editing and also writing other books. I think you get better when you write through the years, was just such a privilege, right? Mm-hmm. To go back and have that opportunity to revise something that, you know, what was a kind of a beloved book to start with, mm-hmm. but like, how could I really make this better? And it's interesting that you mentioned the storytelling part, because in the tradition that I wrote that book back in the day, that my idols were, you know, Lucy Calkins, Nancy Atwell, those kind of books. And that's what you did. You learned through narrative. And, you know, in my graduate school work, I studied qualitative research where you learn through story. You know, mm-hmm. it's a narrative view of the world. But I think through the years I learned you also have to really make sure that in a book like this, that the narrative does the work it needs to do. It has mm-hmm. to help the reader understand something important about what you're doing. And every story has to matter, and it has mm-hmm. to be tight. You know, you can't tell a long story because this is not a story book. This is a book to help people with their practice and their thinking. So to be able to revisit through that lens, like, what are the stories in here that really matter? And, you know, I use the term origin stories for some of the ones that I really wanted to hold on to in the mm-hmm. book about kids, because they were stories that stayed with me for such a long time, you know, and kept informing my work. And that's why they're mm-hmm. still there. Yeah, and you know, when I start thinking about how old those kids are now, we're not original, and it's so funny. And Kyle, you mentioned Kyle. This is lovely. You know, no one can figure out whatever happened. I think that back when we did the original Wondrous Words, the reason we didn't put Kyle's actual writing in there was because it was probably very approximated. And it was very, you know, messy, like a second grade mm. little boy would write, right? Mm-hmm. And so we probably just, because in the original Wondrous Words, they were just typed, it was typed in. And I'm guessing that's why. And of course, no one knows where the originals are now. So I got my eight-year-old nephew to actually write out Kyle's pieces, because I wanted them to be in an eight-year-old little boy's handwriting. And, mm-hmm. But that story, you know, of Kyle and Justin in that opening chapter, those were stories that fed a lifetime of work for me. And they, you know, they deserve to stay. And of course, Stella was able to bring some, you know, just yesterday, wonderful news stories to the book. So anyway, that's a long answer to your question.
No, buddy. It is a great answer, because I think one of the things I love is that, like, with the storytelling part, like for me at least, it was like just enough to get me hooked to want to know more. Like it didn't go on, and it was punchy. It was very punchy. And I love that. I think the other parts that I loved, you talk a lot about, like, because it is a book for teachers, like you had so many elements. I love the section that it said in the classroom. This is like right away. It's like, okay, like now it's go time. Like get your pencil out, get your highlighter out. Like now these are the things I can apply right away. Stella, the question I have for you is, like, what does it mean truly? And obviously this is what, like, the core of the book is, like, truly to read like a writer. And, like, how can we help students move beyond, like, surface level, you know, just intentionality and personal craft decisions? Like, what does that really mean to you?
So one of the things that I'm loving about this conversation already is how we're bringing students' names into the room, into this space. Mm. Honoring them, honoring their brilliance, elevating them. And I am going to bring Will into this space, mm. right? For that question. Because Will said, I ask Will, he's very, he has a YouTube channel and he is very comfortable with the camera. And so at the end of the year, I said, before the end of the year, I said, Will, you know, in preparation for the next year's group, if you were to tell them about writing workshop, what would you tell them? And he said, and he talks to the camera and he said, you guys, you're going to read a lot of books about different authors and they're going to be great. And they're going to inspire you. And inspire you is a word that we use intentionally a lot. You're going to mm-hmm. notice, you're going to be inspired by them. But then he said it in his 9-year-old way, but you got to give it your own twist. And I was like, well, you just brought it home. It's so beautiful, you know, for a 9-year-old to be able to find the way to explain how he internalized this idea mm-hmm. of being like a writer. Like, he's able to read a book, a text, a digital image, mm-hmm. you know, and being able to say, this is what the writer did. How is this inspire me to think about how do I want to do this? Mm-hmm. Talked a lot about who we are as writers, who we are as readers, and who we are as human beings. So this identity mm-hmm. work comes a lot into this decision making, because mm-hmm. who you are, I am I'm a Latine immigrant, and I'm rooted in storytelling. So storytelling is part of how I move through the world. So that is actually how I move, how I speak, how I explain things. For other students, it may be like, I'm very used to talking to people in camera, and this is how I do, and this is how I compose. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to study some digital mentor text on how people do this. And like Will said, give it in my own twist. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what moved from, yes, we start with imitating because it's okay to start there, absolutely. But then it transforms, it evolves from that to, this is me, so this is how I'm going to do it.
I love that section so much, because I'm most recently back into grade 2, teaching second grade, and, you know, they love to draw, right? And just to see, I don't know if I've seen this, Will's story written in a book, to show teachers, like, it's okay that they start in this place that doesn't have words, like, to look at a drawing and to, like, see, like, that is still storytelling. Like, you know, we hear it and people, I think teachers genuinely know it, but sometimes we get afraid when we see it's a drawing. And like, we see that students are still in this drawing phase, and it's not something to be scared of. Like, that is a great start. It's an amazing start. And I loved seeing that in a book, because I have had so many students that just love to draw. And like, I think when they see that teachers are leaning into that and still allowing that and talking to them about how that is a type of, like, you know, storytelling, it changes their whole mindset of, like, what writing is, right? So I really loved just listening to his story and hearing his story, because I think it's going to resonate with so many teachers in the classroom. And it's so, like, now as well. It's so now.
And if I add, Carrie, yeah. like, there is a spread in Wondrous Words where Will is leading the class into his thinking process. And what Wondrous Words is saying, right? Mm-hmm. It's like your habits of mind. How are you coming to the work? The decisions that you make as a writer too. And he says to the class, guys, don't spend too much time like making like perfect little drawings. Like, this is your draft. You want to save that for later. And Will says it. And you know, there is power when Will says it.
There's a section that I literally have written down, and I love the idea, the concept around like when they are sharing, like, am I reading aloud? I have it written here to rehearse, to celebrate. Am I reading it for revising? Like, I love that concept so much, because I think sometimes students believe it just has to be like to celebrate or a finished piece. But I could be just looking for advice. I could just be looking for a tip, or how can I make this better? And that's what they can lean in on. And they don't have to have any type of shame or feelings around that in a community that's safe in the classroom. So I loved that section as well. Katie, one of the things that I want to talk to you about as well is just the idea of like mentor texts. You guys talk a lot about mentor texts and how to help students honor those. Can you tell me a little bit about your journey with mentor texts, why it's important? I think the question here I have is like, how can we use mentor texts to both honor students' voices and stretch their understanding of what writing can be? What do you think about that question? And like, what are some of the things you guys talked about in Wondrous Worlds about mentor texts?
I think one of the keys is, and you see this across the book and particularly in chapter 7 and 8, which are resource chapters. But pretty much anywhere that I'm talking about some craft move, I always show you multiple examples, right? And that is what's so key. It's not like one example. It's not like I'm going to read this book and write a book like it. I think the key to teaching craft is multiple examples of very different writers and very different kinds of texts doing the exact same thing. You know, like your beautiful book, Gary, has sort of a vignette, a repetition that connects a series of vignettes, right? Such a lovely way. Now, you know, you're not the only person who's ever done that, right?
Yes, of course.
Matter of fact, original Wondrous Words, you know, I know so much about Cynthia Ryland. And of course, her beautiful book, When I Was Young in the Mountains, was that kind of text. And so many others, and speeches, you know, the very famous Dr. Martin Luther King speech, I Have a Dream. That was a portion of the speech that used a repeating phrase to connect a series of powerful vignettes. This is so key with mentor text, is that you are showing kids multiple examples of very different kinds of writers doing really exactly the same kind of thing, which is why, you know, that part, I think it's in chapter 2 now. I don't remember exactly where things are because I moved some things around, but that writing style is individual, but it's not unique. What makes you unique is you at one moment in time and your topic. And of course, even topics are not unique. Lots of people, you know, write about growing up, but no one can write your story of growing up, right? Mm-hmm. What makes writing, you know, it's individual, but it's not unique because other people do the same thing. But to really understand that, you have to be seeing the same moves in different places. And this book, it helps you get a start on that. And of course, once you get started, you see it everywhere. Once you change it's very easy to find your own multiple examples. And that's, you know, that's one of the things I really love about the book, is that I have examples of a writer in a picture book for kids doing the exact same thing as a writer in the New York Times, you know, a piece of the Times, which there are a couple of fabulous New York Times examples in there. I would love to do a whole book with just, adult writers in it, but that'll be in my next life, I guess.
I love craft so much. I mean, when I do start writing a piece, I always tell my wife, like, she's an amazing writer. And I always say, like, you can help me with the structure. I'll deal with, like, the craft. You help me with the structure. But I think showing multiple evidence about craft gives them permission as well.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Sometimes they are so, I hate using the word reluctant, but, like, they just don't know that, like, you can take that, what you see, and twist it and turn it upside down if you want to and make it your own. They just don't hear it enough. They don't see it enough. So that section I really, really loved, again, because it gives teachers permission to show, and you give the examples. You're like, here you go. Like, these are the texts that right. I recommend that you can use right away. It's honestly like one of those things where, like, you can just go to the grocery store and it's like, oh, okay, I can go here, pull the text that I need. This is the lesson that I can think about, and you can use it right away. So again,
and I want to say, if I could say one more thing, that, you know, those other questions that you sent us, they're all connected to with mentor text. What's really key, and kids' sense of identity, you ask us about identity. This is key for kids to, for them to make this their own. They have to be able to make a lot of decisions themselves as writers. And, you know, this mm-hmm. book, in the heyday of writing workshops, when we were really trying to just get kids making lots of decisions about their own writing. And so if you want to support a kid's identity as a writer, you ask them questions about why they decided to do things the way they did them. Because if you think about it, in life, when we ask someone a question, we ask them a question because we presume they're the kind of person that would have an answer to that question. Like, there's mm-hmm. certain you'll ask about restaurants, and other people you would never ask about restaurants. There are certain people you ask about something that a noise that your car is making, and other people, like, I probably wouldn't ask Stella about a noise. Mm-hmm. That, I don't really see her as the kind of person who would probably have a great answer to that. So you take that logic to writing, and you ask kids, you know, like, why did you decide to start it this way? This is so interesting. I presume that you have an answer to that, right? That you're the kind of person who decided to start this piece a certain way, or you decided to write this sentence a particular way. But you can only do that if kids are getting to actually make those decisions. If we are teaching very formulaic writing, where the answer to the reason I started this way is because this paper told me to start it that way, then you can't do that work. And the same thing with the crafting moves. Kids have to be able to take it back to work that they are doing on their own, and they decide to use it. You know, I love the work kids try something that we're studying, and everybody tries it, and we've all got an example. But that's not nearly as compelling as when I walk out into the room and I see someone just doing something. I'm like, oh my gosh, look mm-hmm. at how did mm-hmm. well, you know, where did you learn to do that? How did you decide to do that? And, mm-hmm. and the question teaches them that you are the kind of person who would have an answer to this.
Mm-hmm. And when you teach intentionality to kids like that,
yeah,
allows them, it's so powerful. It is, right. It literally takes, you know, that role of like the teacher out of the classroom, and you're just humans. You're just humans working in a space together.
Right.
Learning. That's it. And
right.
That's it.
Yeah. Right.
Stella, I'm thinking a lot about how you guys talk throughout the book about teacher language. And I think it's very connected to what we just talked to Katie mm-hmm. about. And, you know, teacher language is so important. It's so important how, and we as teachers, we make mistakes all the time. We're constantly learning, et cetera. In what ways can teacher language during conferences, because we also speak specifically about conferencing in the book as well, and mini lessons influence how students see themselves as writers?
Yes. So just to even extend the conversation we just had, right, mm-hmm. where Katie just said, you know, how did you decide to do this, right? That's a powerful language. Now, for any teacher that maybe, you know, is listening to this and say, my students will say, I don't know. Know that that is totally their default answer. But mm-hmm. here is where teacher languaging indexes something. And when I said, you know, you do know.
Mm.
And I want you to think about this. Let's look at it together. I just empower the student because their default, they're, you know, as kids is to be like, I don't know. And it's just a way to like avoid explaining your choices as a writer. But this is exactly what Wondrous Words is proposing, right? With Katie Wood Ray. The saying is like, we make decisions as writers and we have to start being intentional about even verbalizing those intentions and those decisions. So one example right there of how, you know, our languaging is supporting and lifting writers is by even staying within that moment and saying, you do know the answer. Let's think mm-hmm. through this. Let's take a minute mm-hmm. to think. You know, mm-hmm. what are you thinking? Walk me through your process. I mm-hmm. use that language a lot in conferring just because I want to understand it's beyond the product. It's beyond what they're producing. It's a mm-hmm. decision making that you make along the way and what got you here. So one of the languages, and I offer that in Wondrous Words is, you know, walk me through your thinking, mm-hmm. you know, tell me how you got here. What inspired you to make this move? Or like the question that I've also, you know, share, and I share this in studying driven, is just thinking about like, what have you read that it looks like the kind of writing you want to do, right? And one little tip that I may give to teachers, because I do think language, you know, we only get stronger in our own crafting of language, is the computer is, our laptop is a very, you know, it's a tool that we use every day as teachers. Almost everyone have their personal laptop, their school laptop, we're opening up every day. I will write myself a sticky note and put it in the corner of my laptop and say, this is a language that I, as a teacher, want to be able to own it because mm-hmm. I know it moves and it helps kids. And I will mm-hmm. write out that language just until it becomes mine, until I can internalize it. So if I may give that advice, it's a very small move. And you can pick up language that we're suggesting in Wondrous Words and mm-hmm. say, you know, this is a language I want to try with my student. Write it down in a note and eventually it becomes yours.
I love that. I love that so much. And it gives me goosebumps because I can like, I mean, I saw pictures of you in the classroom, but I could feel the way that you teach in the classroom just by you talking. And I think it's so powerful when a teacher can sit in, they like, they don't feel uncomfortable anymore with the student not having the answer, right? I think that is so powerful. It's so powerful to be able to sit as a teacher, and maybe that student doesn't know, and you can walk away feeling okay that they don't know yet. But the book in itself helps so much with like helping the kid understand why they made that choice, whether it's through a mentor text, whether it's through all the specific examples, a friend that has done it in the classroom, a book that they've been reading. Like, you're already trying to set all of these things up so they have some understanding around why they're doing these things. It's just allowing them to get there on their own first. And again, the book really does such a wonderful job of that. It really, really does. I have one more question. I haven't written this down, but what's one thing that you loved about each other during this process?
I'll go first because I was just thinking of when Stella was talking. I loved watching her in classrooms. Kids just shine when she talks to them. They just glow. And she just has such a lovely way with children of bringing out, you know, just their thoughtfulness, helping them believe in their own thoughtfulness, their own intentionality, as you said. It's really magical. And I know that technically she's there to teach teachers, but for teachers to be able to watch her work with children was just amazing. She's the real deal, and kids just glow in her presence.
Not surprised.
Katie, Juju, your words just make me emotional just listening to them, because I've said this during our process. I love and respect Katie so much. She, to me, and I say this in every conversation that I have, and people know this, I'm very intentional in the ways that I occupy space. And I say I am a scholar of Katie Wood Wright's work. Her work has changed me as a teacher of writing, and I am who I am, and I continue to become because of the foundation that she has laid for me. Oh, so Katie, wow. I have said this to you, and I will say it again and again and again in all the spaces that I get to enter. You have helped me, and you continue to help me become the person, the writer, and the teacher of writing that I am.
Wow. I want to thank both of you for this conversation and just like creating such a beautiful text that I think truly should be on the shelves of all teachers. I think it is truly something that I think they will be able to pick up and read continuously throughout their career. And I hope it's something that's passed through classrooms, through libraries forever. I mean, honestly, and I'm not just saying this, I loved it. And I just appreciate you guys so much for our conversation today. So thank you.
Thank you, Gary. Thanks for having
me. Thank you, Gary. Thank you.
12-hour time difference.
Oh, that was so, okay, I'm going to press stop.